Save big on your next landscaping project at Menards. We make landscaping simple with our free, easy-to-use design program and step-by-step project guides. Plus, we have the largest in-stock selection of concrete landscape blocks at the best prices. Save big on our 12-inch smooth patio blocks on sale now. Stop in to see our full selection and get your project started. Check out our weekly flyer on Menards.com for all the great deals happening now. Save big money
at Menards. Of course, Trump probably was like, oh, then I can put it in my library like Reagan.
Yes. It's going to be the biggest, baddest, most beautiful jet. It's beautiful. It's a beautiful jet.
It's a beautiful jet. It's going to be awesome.
It's the biggest jet.
It's a beautiful, palace in the sky. Awesome.
It's a palace in the sky.
Welcome to Rivera and Reeves, the podcast where we break through the bias, report the news, and occasionally trip over our soapboxes while ranting about the headlines.
Every week, we tackle the biggest stories with sharp analysis, unfiltered honesty, and just enough sarcasm to keep it fun.
So pull up a chair, grab your coffee, and join us as we wade through the spin because the media is trash and we have zero patience for their nonsense.
Hey, friends, and welcome to another episode of Rivera and Reeves. I'm Sadie, and I'm here with my friend Rachel. Say hello, Rachel.
Hello, Rachel.
And, bro, Mondays are supposed to be slow.
It's too much.
Yesterday,
this is the official warning that Miss Sadie and I have not stopped, will not stop, will never get bored, ever,
can't
ever,
stop,
ever.
Won't stop, won't let me stop. Yeah. Like,
it's crazy. It's crazy
so
out there.
It was
there.
Supposed to be Mother's Day weekend. Happy Mother's Day, by the way, to all the mamas who are listening. I hope you guys had a fabulous and wonderful Mother's Day weekend. The president apparently didn't get the memo on this. Neither did the news cycle.
Nope.
Because they decided
does not
to go
care.
Full throttle this weekend. So a lot of stuff happened over the weekend. We had to pick and choose. It's like a lot of stuff, but it's a lot of little stuff. But we're going to focus on some of the bigger stuff. And then we're going to leave the smaller stuff for earmarks. And then also some stories feel like they need to incubate a little bit longer before we can talk about them. Because you know us, we're a little slow here on the news cycle because we want to get it right, not first.
Yep.
So what are we talking
and
about?
Also, we have limitations. We just can't talk.
Yeah, there's only two of us. We don't have a newsroom. Nope. We don't have a team. We literally think goodness for AI, frankly, because if they want to be able to like pull some research or additional research for me really quickly, we would be up a creek right now.
Yeah.
So what are we talking about today? Big thing that dominated the news over the weekend is this Qatar plane that Trump could possibly or looks like he wants to be accepting from Qatar. So we're going to talk about that. Yeah, big sigh on that one. And we're also going to talk about a little bit of a ruckus that happened this weekend at an ICE detention facility in New Jersey, which bled into yesterday.
So wait, was that only this weekend? I feel like that was ages ago.
I don't know if
my
it was.
Gosh.
Was it over the weekend or on Friday? It may have been like Friday afternoon. Regardless, it bled into Monday. So there was like a round two on Monday. So we're going to talk about that. But before we get into today's episode, if this is your first time here, welcome. You have found your new favorite podcast. Make sure you hit that follow button so you don't miss another episode. There is a link in the show notes if you want to consider becoming a paying supporter and get your episodes ad-free. We also had a bonus episode this weekend, which I did not promote like I usually do because it was a busy weekend.
It's crazy.
So there's an unfiltered episode that was out this weekend. We discussed the debate that is happening online about the woke right. We shared our thoughts. We shared our opinions. I would suggest that you give that a listen and consider becoming a paying supporter so you can listen to the entire episode. Also, there's merch. And we are in the home stretch for our survey, our listener survey, which, by the way, I forgot to put the link in the show notes on the last episode for the listener survey. My bad. I actually figured it out this morning because I saw comments. I finally looked at comments and I was like, oh, whoopsie.
Whoops.
So there's still time. Don't worry about it. The link, I promise you, I have a big post-it on my computer. It's in the show notes.
It's really there. Promise.
Fill out that survey and also have a chance to win a free annual subscription and some Rivera and Reeves merch, which has been well received.
It's very cute.
Well, thank you. I designed it myself.
You did a great job.
All right, so let's talk about this plane. The plane, boss. The plane.
Okay. I guess. We must.
Well, okay. So I remember when I initially saw this, let me give you guys a rundown first before I start sharing my thoughts. Sometimes I get a little bit ahead of myself. So over the weekend, ABC broke the story. And the way they presented the story was that Trump was going to be receiving or accepting a 747-8 from Qatar's royal family to use as Air Force One. This plane is 14 years old. It is worth a measly, just very conservative, $400 million. It is supposed to be a temporary fix until the new planes that were ordered from Boeing, which are delayed and over budget, finally get delivered. This Boeing situation was something that was renegotiated by Trump during his first administration.
Yeah.
And we still have no planes. And so now they're going to be due between 2027 and 2029, somewhere in there, which I think is a pretty big window of time for them to be turning in a plane. But in the meantime, Trump plans on accepting this plane from Qatar. And then it's going to be outfitted by our Air Force.
Once yeah, I would hope so. After a very, very, very secure security check. Like this, we cannot have a Trojan horse situation happening. We need all hands on deck, literally taking the plane apart and then putting it back together again.
This plane
accept it.
Needs a figure like colonoscopy. Like,
yeah, for real.
Completely checked out, cleared out, evacuated, all of the above. So
yes,
it's, I don't know, like it's been very initially. So ABC broke the report, and I'm gonna be frank with you. I was like, this isn't accurate.
This cannot be fake.
I know. Well, I didn't necessarily. I was like, maybe it's not fake per se, but maybe it's like there has to be something misrepresented here.
Exactly what's happening.
The only talking point that I would say is misrepresented, and I'm air quoting with my fingers here, is that the plane, because there's also another element to this. So the plane isn't necessarily being gifted to Trump, and it isn't being gifted to the president as of right now. It's being given to the Department of Defense. And so the Department of Defense is taking possession of it temporarily, which is, they're also the ones who like are in charge of Air Force One. And then they're going to be coordinating the outfitting of the plane. So technically it is to the government. It is not to the president. I think the bigger issue is that there is also a proposal that once the new plane comes in from Boeing, is that this plane is going to be retired and Trump's, I guess,
presidential library is going to receive it, which is what they're saying makes it legal to accept it.
Well, the bigger problem. I think the fact
So let's go to the Constitution, shall we? Let's visit our documents. Article 1, Section 9, Clause 8, known as the
elopement.
No, it's not elopement.
Wait, hold on.
Emolument clause.
Elopement. No, and I spoke it with such confidence because I literally
It up. That's what it takes to win. Just go with it. You should have just gone with it.
We started, and I was like, I'm going to know this.
So it states that no person holding any office of profit or trust under the United States, including the president, shall accept any present emolument, office or title from any foreign state or leader without the consent of Congress. So in practice, this basically means that a president can accept like a gift from a foreign leader, but only if Congress approves
it.
Yeah. So
has not happened in this case.
No. And like, I can't wait for there to be a vote taken about whether we can accept a $400 million plane from Qatar, but okay. Gifts are often handled through like protocols. So like ceremonial items, statues, all these different things that like a foreign leader will bring as a gift when they visit are typically accepted on behalf of the U.S. government, reported and managed by the State Department or the General Services Administration. Basically what they're saying that this is going to be used and then it's going to end up at Trump's library. kind of like in a hangar, like when you go to the Air and Space Museum and you see
Reagan's Air Force One was retired and is in his library now.
Was it from Qatar?
I'm not using that as an example to justify it. I'm just saying that there's the plane. And of course, Trump probably was like, oh, then I can put it in my library like Reagan.
Yes. It's going to be the biggest, baddest, most beautiful jet. It's beautiful. It's a beautiful jet.
It's a beautiful jet. It could be awesome.
It's the biggest jet.
It's a beautiful, palace in the sky. Awesome.
It's a palace in the sky. My daughter can do the Trump, the hands and everything. I'm going to get her to say it.
Okay. So we're laughing about this, but let's be honest. Like,
but it's for real.
It's for real. Now, I don't know why this, but I looked it up because I was curious. I'm like, is there an issue with the current Air Force One that Trump is flying around on? Which, he, by the way, he's in Saudi Arabia. I've been watching all the pomp and circumstance, like this on morning. My television. It was wild.
Yeah.
And the Saudi prince greeted him at the tarmac, which was like a big deal, apparently. Anyway, I'm not going to get sidetracked. Not the same story. We'll probably talk about that on Thursday if anything of significance happens. So the current Air Force One, which is the 747-200B, is 35 years old. And currently, because of its age, like, it is hard to source parts. And it is, it's a drain. It's a financial drain. Yes. So Trump was asked about this during his presser yesterday when he was preparing to sign his biggest EO about the prescription drugs. Yeah. And he basically said the Department of Defense is getting a gift free of charge of a 747 aircraft. It's a very public transaction. It's transparent. And he basically said, I would be stupid not to accept it.
I think Qatar, who has really, we've helped them a lot over the years in terms of security and safety. I feel they, I think they, and very, very nicely, and I have a lot of respect for the leadership and for the leader, Qatar. And I think they very, they knew about it because they buy Boeings. They buy a lot of Boeings. And they knew about it. And they said, we would like to do something. And if we can get a 747 as a contribution to our Defense Department to use during a couple of years while they're building the other ones, I think that was a very nice gesture. Now, I could be a stupid person and say, oh, no, we don't want a free plane. We give free things out. We'll take one, too. And it helps us out because, again, we're talking about we have 40-year-old aircraft. The money we spend, the maintenance we spend on those planes to keep them tippy-top is astronomical. You wouldn't even believe it. So I think it's a great gesture from Qatar. I appreciate it very much. I would never be one to turn down that kind of an offer. I mean, I could be a stupid person, say, no, we don't want a free, very expensive airplane. But it was, I thought it was a great gesture. And I think it was a gesture because of the fact that we have helped and continue to, we will continue to, all of those countries, Saudi Arabia, UAE, Qatar, and others, we keep them safe. If it wasn't for us, they probably wouldn't exist right now. And I think this was just a gesture of good faith. And I don't get it. Someday it'll be like Ronald Reagan. They decommission them. You know, they get to a certain age, they decommission them. It'll go to my library. They're talking about going to my library in years out. But I thought it was a great gesture.
Well, all the media ran with that, too. They are basically making this sound like it is absurd to talk about, to even consider, and that it's all about money for Trump.
Bribe. What the concern is that this is a bribe.
Quid pro quo. Like, he's delivering something for them because they're giving
Or
them this,
at some point, Qatar is setting up the stage so when they have to come back later or maybe ask for a favor later, this is like buttering Trump up for that favor.
Right.
It's kind of what the issue is. I will admit, and I'm like, I'm going to be fair. Yes, Air Force One is old. Yes, Boeing has mismanaged the contract and is very much delayed. We need a new plane. All of the above, all these things are true. However, let's also have a discussion as to why this is not a plane being gifted to us by, I don't know, France or Switzerland. It's Qatar. And it is a problem because Qatar has long had ties to terrorism. And I think,
I mean, because so my husband,
I was having this discussion with my husband. He's like, well, I don't see what the big deal is. And I'm like, the big deal is, like, even if it's legal, the optics of it are look muy malo, okay?
Yeah,
not bueno.
Great. Yeah. This isn't... Especially right now while we're dealing with...
With the Middle East.
The hostage... Yeah, the Middle East issue. And all of a sudden, on the exact same weekend that the last Israeli hostage is
released
by Hamas, some people are saying it's a cycle because that's happening. But apparently Qatar could have had the ability to release, work with Hamas and release this hostage earlier. And here we are accepting a plane from them. It just feels ill-timed, all very kind of...
It doesn't look good and it really frustrates me because, like, now I think Trump has this flaw, or however you want to categorize it, where because he's a businessman, to him, if it just makes good sense, then he's, well, why not? I would be stupid to turn down, like, we need this plane. They're giving it to us for free. I can do it legally. Why can't I? I'm saving money. Yeah. I'm also going to get my palace in the sky. I guarantee you has gold details in it, okay? Because it's coming from Qatar.
Oh, of course.
So is he going to keep the gold in it? Is he going to gold it out like he has the Oval Office?
Yes, and he really has tricked out that Oval Office. It is... Like, there's something else.
So the problem here is, as I mentioned before, this is not a plane that is being gifted to you by Switzerland or Germany or France or anything like that. This is Qatar, which, by the way, the Hamas leaders were living up the Vida Loca, okay, in Qatar.
Nice Ricky Martin reference. Great.
With their billions of dollars while coordinating an attack against Israel.
Yep. Not
That's
great.
Not good. And it's not even just Hamas. They have a long history of funding, supporting, running cover for terrorist organizations throughout the Middle East. And I found this clip from, I can't remember, it was from the Saudi foreign minister, like former foreign minister, where he was asked about Qatar specifically. And in this clip, he's a Saudi. Okay. We're talking about someone from the Middle East. This isn't a Western leader or ambassador or anything like that. And he clearly states Qatar is a problem because they fund terrorism in the Middle East.
Like a guy that kind of has a pulse on the situation.
Exactly.
The Qataris since the mid 90s have been sponsoring radicals. They have been inciting people. They have become a base for the leadership for the Muslim Brotherhood. And the Muslim Brotherhood, you have to keep in mind, is what begot us Takfir and Hijra, which begot us Al-Qaeda, which begot us Al-Nusra. The Qataris allow their senior religious clerics to go on television and justify suicide bombings. That's not acceptable. The Qataris harbor and shelter terrorists. That's not acceptable. And Nashri, the head of Al-Qaeda in the Arabian Peninsula in 2000, and entered Saudi Arabia on a Qatari passport. We captured Al-Qaeda types coming into Saudi Arabia with Qatari passports. The Qataris know this. The Americans know this. The world knows this. The Qataris are funding dissidents in the Emirates and Bahrain and Saudi Arabia and in Kuwait in order to cause problems for those governments and to create instability. Why would you do this? The Qataris pay ransom to terrorist groups, including $500 million to Hezbollah in Iraq, $50 million to Qasem Soleimani, according to text messages between the Qatari ambassador in Iraq and the foreign minister of Iraq, including, I don't know how much, to Hezbollah in Lebanon. Is that acceptable? If we gave $1 to Hezbollah in Iraq, we'd be sued in a court down the street. And so the Qataris use their media platforms to spread hate. The Qataris send weapons to Al-Qaeda-affiliated militias in Libya. The Qatari emir was conniving with Gaddafi on how to overthrow Saudi Arabia. The Qataris connected Gaddafi with a Saudi dissident in London who they fund, who connected the Libyans with a group in Mecca with the objective of assassinating the then crown prince, later king of Saudi Arabia. Is this acceptable?
I think another concern that a lot of people have brought up is that, which a lot of people don't know this, is that Pam Bondi, RAG, was a FARA representative for Qatar. So if you guys don't know what FARA is, which we've mentioned in the past because it had to do, remember a little someone named Hunter Biden?
Who I've heard of him.
Correct. And he never registered as a FARA agent when he was representing Ukraine with the whole Burisma deal. So FARA is the Foreign Agents Registration Act, and it requires individuals and entities acting as agents for foreign countries to register with the United States. That's what Pam Bondi was for Qatar after she served as AG of Florida. So she has an existing like relationship with Qatar. Not only that, but our Middle Eastern envoy, Steve Witkoff, who is a real estate developer, he kind of got bailed out by Qatar's investment authority to the tune of $623 million when they purchased the Park Lane Hotel. Because I think he had purchased the hotel, but it was embroiled in some litigation and he couldn't unload it. Like he couldn't use it. He couldn't unload it. And so the Qatar Investment Authority came in and purchased it. And Witkoff has spoken praises, frankly, about Qatar, saying that they're good people, that they're honest people, that they're good people to do business with. And I wouldn't doubt that from a businessman perspective, that they're like good to do business with. But there's a big difference between doing business with them and then
and
what are they
honest people?
Like, well, and what are they doing with that business afterwards? I think would be a little bit more of the bigger problem.
Well, and honestly, what is like the one question that I feel like people are kind of asking, but definitely conservatives and Republicans who are very like pro Trump, pro whatever he does, are not asking themselves like, why are they doing this?
Why is Qatar doing this?
Yes. Why? Yes. What is the angle?
Well, and because they're not exactly known to kind of just do anything out of the goodness of their heart.
Yeah. So what is it? And I mean, there are people that are saying, I thought wisely, actually, that are saying, don't just assume that Donald Trump is accepting it because he can be bought. I'm not saying that we can't ask that or even that there's things that substantiate that argument from the past. But I think it might be worth saying maybe he's got an angle to it as well. Maybe this is calculated. There's a reason why he's accepting this, if he accepts it. I don't know. Or maybe he's not thinking that hard about it. He's just, it's a pretty sweet plane.
That's what I think it is.
Yeah, I think it could be either.
I think he's just, again, like I said, it's a really big plane. It's a palace in the sky.
It's a palace in the sky.
I'm going to save us some money. It's going to be awesome.
I know.
Yeah. I really don't necessarily have a huge concern of this being about enriching himself or benefiting himself. First of all, the plane is going to the DOD, so it's not going to his pocket. It's not like something that he can sell. It's not even something that he's going to be using afterwards. I mean, yes, you can argue that he's going to have possession of the plane because the library or whatever. But
he can't just go hop on it anytime he wants, especially after he's out of office. It's not like he's going to fly it to Mar-a-Lago and put it in the parking lot. You know what I mean? It's not going to be technically his. It's just another piece of history he can add to. This happened under my watch when I was in my second term, my second of three terms, because
my bigger issue
he's running again.
My bigger issue is the overall problematic optics of it.
Optics. We're always talking about optics.
Yes. It's like, why are you doing this? Why do you continue? Especially my concern, of course, if we lose the House in the midterms, or if we lose the House and the Senate, we are in so much trouble.
So much trouble.
They are looking for opportunities to push an impeachment if they take control of the House. And this is going to be one of them. This is probably going to be one of them that they're going to be researching, that they're going to be investigating, and we're never going to hear the end of it. And so I'm just like, why give them the ammunition?
Anything.
Yep. Anything. And just that I do not like the idea, frankly, for me personally, this is me personally stepping in with my own opinion, my two cents here. I don't like the idea of the U.S. president planting his butt on a plane that was funded by a country that supports terrorism across the land or across the world.
That makes sense to me. I feel seen when you say that. I don't like it. I don't even know any other way to put it. And it's interesting because I'm not the only one. And so I'm wondering, because Trump does, one of the positive qualities that he has is that he listens and he will course correct if he sees that he should, for example.
Yeah. And he doesn't have a hard time like going, yeah, we were going to do it. Now we're not. Or I like that, but no more. He really doesn't have a problem doing that, which I actually, like you said, I think it's a positive. I really like that about him, actually.
And right now he's getting, it's not like this is being particularly defended by Republicans. Even Laura Loomer, she posted Laura Loomer.
Yeah, and she's like a sycophant. Like she loves him. And she was like, look, I like the president and all, but maybe don't do this. When you've lost Laura Loomer.
I was like,
maybe you should rethink.
So I don't know. We will see how this eventually pans out because he has not taken possession of the plane.
No, but there are people on both sides that are questioning the legality. I mean, I saw Rand Paul running the circuit on different shows basically saying this is illegal. They can't do this. They shouldn't do it. Or it's close enough, like borderline, it could be interpreted as illegal. So maybe don't accept the terrorist plane.
Don't give him the ammunition.
I know.
The other thing is that I'm scrolling and I'm looking into this story and I'm seeing, I don't like the whole Pam Bondi Witkoff connection. Mm-hmm. But also I saw a video of Trump back in 2017 where he was addressing, I can't remember exactly what the event was.
You sent it to me.
And he was in the Rose Garden. He was addressing something. And initially I was a little confused as to, because apparently the man has not aged in 8 years. So I was a little confused as to what year this was. But when he mentioned Tillerson as his, I think, I can't remember what position was. I was like, okay, I knew it was the first Trump 1.0. And he himself said that Qatar, the nation of Qatar, has been a funder of terrorism at a very high level. And he continued to talk about how Qatar is a problem.
Unfortunately, has historically been a funder of terrorism at a very high level. And in the wake of that conference, nations came together and spoke to me about confronting Qatar over its behavior. So we had a decision to make. Do we take the easy road or do we finally take a hard but necessary action? We have to stop the funding of terrorism. I decided, along with Secretary of State Rex Tillerson, our great generals and military people, the time had come to call on Qatar to end its funding. They have to end that funding and its extremist ideology in terms of funding. I want to call on all of the nations to stop immediately supporting terrorism.
Why has this suddenly changed? Is it because one of his, that's what I'm saying. I think it's just because one of his faults is that if it makes simple sense to him, he's just kind of like, why not? Mm-hmm. To him, if I were to give him the benefit of the doubt, which of course I'm going to do more so than others, he's like, yeah, I'll take the plane. I need the plane. Why not? I'm not going to give you anything for that plane. If you want to give it to me, sounds like a good deal to me. I think that's really as simple as it's where
it's
at.
Pretty basic. Yeah.
The man is not that deep. I feel a kinship with him because of that.
Okay. Oh, come on, Mercedes. I think you're a little bit deeper than you like to give yourself credit for. Don't sell yourself short.
Oh, my gosh. But so I don't know. He just seems to have done a 180 on this and it doesn't look good.
It's weird.
I don't see why we're giving the ammunition when the Democrats continue to do stupid things. And we should just kind of let them continue to do stupid things without giving them ammunition. So stupid thing that happened on Friday. OK. Yeah. Newark, New Jersey. Which,
oh gosh,
I was like, I didn't think I was going to be talking about New Jersey anytime soon.
Well, there's a lot going on in New York. Like their airport is falling apart.
Oh, yeah.
They're just having a hard week.
They're having a rough time right now.
I mean, poor Sean Duffy, that guy is working so hard.
Well, and just because we're about to talk about New Jersey, but, you know, to get a little sidetracked here. So it is mind-boggling to me. The media of how they've been trying to represent all of the air FAA struggles.
Right.
And immediately when this happened initially, what was it, last week in Newark, where the systems like shut down and at one point air traffic control like lost communication with planes for 30 minutes.
Yep. 250 planes were grounded. It was a disaster.
Yeah, it was really bad. And so immediately the media is kind of trying to bring up DOGE and cutting, which no emergency people have been cut from the FAA, is what Duffy has pointed out.
Yes.
What he has also pointed out is that the previous administration were very well aware of the issues across all of our airports, but especially in Newark.
And did nothing.
And did nothing.
Well, and think about everything that's falling apart within the last 3 months with transportation and infrastructure surrounding it. And the media, they have been given a gift because it all literally started happening within the last 3 months. It's just kind of real opportune for them because they can say, oh, look, once Trump got in office, everything starts falling apart. But I mean, anybody smarter than an average bear can go, well, it's because literally the last administration's Secretary of Transportation did nothing. I mean, he was never around.
I think there was at some point interviewed. Duffy did. Sorry to interrupt you, but Duffy did an interview with Fox News where he mentioned that when he was speaking, you know how like cabinet members will speak to each other when they're transferring power.
Yes. Yes.
He basically said to Duffy that this runs itself.
Well, yeah, I mean, listen, the prior secretary indicated to me that this was a department that ran itself. And, you know, when he was a secretary, I'm not sure that he actually showed up to the office. Most of the office didn't come into work. And so as I've been here, this is my 100th day, Sean. I've been here for 100 days. And this is more than a full-time job. You have to show up. You have to work 12, 16 hours a day to do this job. And if you don't come, things don't happen. And for people to judge, when you don't show up and you get multiple warnings from watchdog groups that say, hey, listen, the air traffic control system is failing. You have to take action. They did absolutely nothing. The Biden administration, remember this, Sean? They spent $1.2 trillion on infrastructure in America. $1.2 trillion. None of it went to fix the air traffic control system, which is a crumbling infrastructure, key infrastructure in this country. They didn't fix it. And so today we rolled out the most historic aviation plan that has been ever laid out in the history of man. We are going to rebuild every part, every aspect of the air traffic control system. So it's going to be, as you played the clip, it's going to be radios, radar, a whole infrastructure of telecom, all the front-facing and back office side of telecommunication for air traffic controllers. They're going to have a brand new system. But here's what's key.
All right.
This would normally take...
Oh, go ahead.
Sean, go ahead. I was going to say, this would normally take 10 or 15 years. We can do this, Sean, in 3 or 4 years, fix this system, but we need Congress to give us all the money up front, and then we need them to waive a lot of the requirements for permitting. If they do that for us, we can actually build this really quick and make sure our skies are still the safest in the world.
If that would give you any kind of context of how hard this man worked, especially considering that he disappeared for what, like 2 months during his paternity leave?
Right, right. Mm-hmm. And then there was those major catastrophes in like Ohio, and he just wasn't even around. He didn't bother to visit, or he showed up late. And then all of a sudden, Trump takes office, and because of their negligence, everything starts falling apart or hitting the fan. And Sean Duffy on his first day is like, okay, I guess we're jumping right in. And he has not
literally
since then. Yeah. So anyhow, Newark not having a great time of it.
Well, and let me just point out.
Poor city. They're struggling.
Let me also point out that the floppy disks were being used long before Duffy came in. The copper wires existed long before Duffy came in.
It's not all the Secretary of Transportation's fault.
I know there was a little bit of a sidetrack, but if anybody's telling you that this is because this administration has been failing, fake news.
They are lying to you.
Absolutely.
Which they always are.
Also, don't fly through Newark anytime soon.
Forever.
Ever again. But speaking of Newark, New Jersey, it was on the 9th today. So what was that? Friday.
Mm-hmm.
On Friday, there was breaking news because three New Jersey representatives, the New Jersey mayor, who reportedly is going to be running for governor, and a group of protesters went to an ICE detention center in New Jersey. I cannot remember the name of the detention center off the top of my head. And they basically stormed the gates. So the report is that when a van transportation vehicle that was transporting deportees,
or inmates, however you want to define them, when the gates opened, they used that opportunity to push their way into the facilities and trespass, essentially. Now, these three New Jersey representatives are Bonnie Watson Coleman, Rob Menendez, which is Bob Menendez's son, by the way. And I know,
I'm sorry. Bob just keeps popping up. He just is everywhere.
Him and his gold bars.
I know, but he's kind of like the Matt Gaetz, you know, of
the Democrat Party.
Yeah, where it's like, you need to go away for a while. Like, just go away for a while. But Rob is still around.
Yeah, yes. He was there.
Bob's ghost remains.
And then LaMonica McIver. Now, they're all New Jersey representatives. And so it is my understanding that it is correct when these three representatives make the claim that they have a right to visit these federal-run facilities in their state, that they have a right to do a spot check, visit, or whatever. Mm-hmm. It is within their right.
Basically.
Yes, correct. Mm-hmm. The issue, I think, more is the fact that they just showed up. They didn't call ahead. They didn't make an appointment. They showed up with a group of protesters. They showed up with the mayor. Also, we kind of knew this was happening because the mayor was posting on X that this was the plan. Mm-hmm. That the plan was basically to storm the gates and force themselves in to check on this facility. So there was already rumors like this was also, let's point out that, again, he has hopes for running for governor. So this is also, I would say, political performance.
Mm-hmm.
Now, in the process of them busting into the facility, there was a tussle.
Yes.
And in the end, the mayor was arrested for, because he does not have jurisdiction to go and cross into the ICE facilities and then just start
whenever
throwing
he wants
hands,
to with protesters.
And start throwing.
They're
officers.
Taking the whole, this is my constitutional duty to have oversight over my constituents and where they live. I need to be involved. This is my duty as a representative. They're taking that and assuming that that means they can do all manner of things that are not included in that constitutional right. You can't just storm a building and be like, this is my constitutional right because I'm the representative. You can't do that. But they're just saying,
it's very Leroy Jenkins of them. Are you familiar with that reference?
Yes. And then you have AOC online.
Oh my gosh.
Online saying, if you put a finger on them, you're going to have us to answer to.
If anyone's breaking the law in this situation, it's not members of Congress, it's the Department of Homeland Security. It's people like Tom Homan and Secretary Kristi Noem. You lay a finger on someone, on Representative Bonnie Watson Coleman, on Representative, or any of the representatives that were there, you lay a finger on them, we are going to have a problem.
And I'm like, ma'am, I understand that you're, but you know, everybody wants to say that they own the rights to their interpretation. Well, they do own the rights to their interpretation of the Constitution, but that doesn't mean that you can take your interpretation of what you wish it said that you could do and swap that out for the actual laws. Just because you're a representative doesn't mean that you can do whatever the heck you want and claim this is my duty as a speaker for the people. That's not how it works.
Well, and then the body cam image or body cam footage was released later. And in the process of the officers arresting the mayor who trespassed, and it was Alina Abba, by the way, who is the acting New York federal district attorney, who said, yes, arrest him. He is in violation. She was like, I'm not going to put up with any of this. The body cam footage, I just don't understand. Let him get arrested and deal with the situation later. But that's not what happens. The protesters start to surround the officers. They try to block the arrest of the mayor.
Great idea.
This Representative Monica McIver, there's a split. I want to say McIver. There's like a split shot where she punches one of the officers in the back trying to stop him from the arrest.
Not was she also arrested?
No, not yet.
For assaulting an officer?
Not yet, because they're still, I think initially the body cam footage has just been released. I don't know if they're going to do it. I think
it's official like law enforcement police week in the country. And I think that as a gift, she should be arrested.
As a gift to the law enforcement officer?
Yes, for assaulting a police officer. Like, when did all these laws not matter anymore? When could they just do stuff? If you work with Stop Oil, you could just sit in the middle of a crowded freeway and stop traffic. That's legal now. All this stuff, like, bothers me.
Well, and it bothers me because you can block traffic. You can throw hands with officers at a ICE detention facility. But if an abortion protester is even sit near an abortion facility,
straight to jail. Yeah, it's great. Like, the double standards abound. It is annoying.
It's wild to me. Okay. Yeah. It's just wild to me. But I saw a clip of, because the question is, who is in these detention facilities? The assistant secretary, Trisha McLaughlin, I think is her last name. She did an interview where she laid out this. First of all, she described how they slipped into the facility. They followed a vehicle in. Mm-hmm. And she was pointing out that this facility has some of the worst. It has murderers, it has rapists, and these are all people who have been arrested that are illegals, that are ready for deportation.
Thanks, Victor, for having me. I'm glad I can be here to actually give viewers the facts. What happened is that these members of Congress, including the mayor as well, in a mob of protesters, as there was a bus full of detainees going through the gate, they stormed the gate and actually entered the first security checkpoint. This put law enforcement at risk, and this actually put the detainees as well at risk. If any official, including these members of Congress, want to enter the facility and take a tour, DHS is more than accommodating. But just because you're a member of Congress does not mean you can break the law, trespass, put law enforcement at risk, and storm the detention facility. I have yet to hear anyone on this network actually talk about who is in this detention facility. There are members of MS-13, known terrorists, murderers, child rapists. There are some of the worst in this detention facility. And I'm still very confused why these Democrats are so hell-bent on getting these heinous actors out of this facility when we have the proper permitting. And actually, in that press conference, those members of Congress actually noted the great conditions of this facility that our ICE enforcement officers so bravely operate.
So,
and I don't understand why the Democrats, again, are trying to defend these individuals or trying to, I don't know, represent them. And then what was wild is, if you watch my stories today, I was collecting the news for this outline, right? And I remembered early on that I had seen, you know how, like, afterwards when they do this kind of stuff, they do a little presser and talk about what's going on. So Bonnie Watson Coleman, who is this older lady, was speaking, and I remember watching her speak, and she's talking about what happened inside. And then she goes and she says, but we got inside the facility. We got to see it. It was clean. Everybody's taken care of. We saw that they're being fed. She stated that basically everything is fine. So all of the concerns that we're all supposed to be assuming were not a problem. And then she pauses, and I almost feel like she realizes what she says is not exactly helping
her
case.
Wait a second.
And then she goes, ICE is out of control with her. And she goes into a spiel about how ICE is out of control and nabbing people off the street and everything. So when I went looking for the clip last night, I could not find it anywhere.
Weird.
And then I found, I found a clip on YouTube from a San Francisco affiliate, San Francisco Fox affiliate, by the way. And I recognized the thumbnail. I was like, okay, this must be it. So I hit play on it, and they jump cut that portion.
They took it out?
They took it out. They completely took it out. And I found it, actually, because then I kept digging, and I found that Fox News reported on it also, and they kept that portion in.
Wow.
So I was just like, I could not find her saying that everything was okay in the facility anywhere.
That's crazy.
And then afterwards, when she was like, okay, well, I think I've spoken enough, I should hand it over to LaMonica. So she takes a mic and she goes off and basically plays the victim, your typical spiel, the victim, the oppression, the authority, authoritarian government, all that kind of stuff. And I just thought it was hilarious that now, but nobody wants to talk about the fact that Coleman said that the facility was just fine. And within
that's not important because it doesn't carry water for the narrative that they need to continue to press, which is that ICE is taking innocent people, snatching them off the streets, putting them in detention centers. It's horrible. It's a violation of human rights.
Well, and I think that's what some people really truly believe, because
I do too.
Of course, these representatives were doing the circuit over the weekend. And then yesterday morning, reports started to pop up that faith leaders of, and I'm air quoting
leaders. Yeah, I saw that.
In New Jersey, were forming a human chain in front of the entrance of this detention facility to, I guess, block people or the vehicles from entering the facility. It ended again in a tussle and arrest, but I remember specifically seeing this one woman, and they're all older women, or not old, well, not all Always. Older women, but they're all older. They're singing, I don't know, Kumbaya or whatever the heck they're singing in front of the facility.
With their like rainbow stoles
yes.
and Ukraine flags and of course all the predictable garb.
And this one van was pulling up, and it's a tinted van, like you can't really see into it, but she has a sign that says love on it.
Mm-hmm.
And she's like showing it and pushing it into the window and like trying to wave at them. And like, you have no idea. My assumption is that this woman has to really truly believe that innocent people are just being snatched up off the street, and that the person that is in there is more likely than not a criminal that needs to be gone. And I just do not understand why they continue to do this. Like, you can make the point and you can have these criticisms without, I don't know, aligning yourself with murderers and rapists and drug dealers.
I think at this point, it's like a sunk cost. I keep trying to also think about that with the trans issue. You have a lot of activists, well, even set the activist aside. You have parents of children that go to school with kids that are quote unquote trans or that are trying to play on the different sports teams of the opposite gender. And even people who have kind of been on the outskirts, but still said, yeah, I support trans rights. And, but then in the abundance of information that they've been given with the evidence of the election, where there is just little to no appetite for this topic in our culture, even in our culture, people are saying, no, not for me, even Democrats. And yet there's still that contingent that is, they've sunk so much of their time and treasure into supporting it that they can't turn back now. And so with this issue of the whole deportation, the capture of illegal immigrants, the separating of families justifiably because people need to be deported, you have a bigger group of Democrats and progressives that it does not matter what the story is behind these illegal immigrants or what they've done or who they're associated with or the history of crimes that they've committed. They are still going to portray them as sympathetic. I think just because they've so looped themselves into kind of that ethos. All deportation is bad. Immigration net good. We need to be sympathetic to people. Jailing or putting people in detention centers doesn't heal them. I think they've just like handed over too much of their life to give up now. They're just going to double down and triple down.
Well, also, I wonder if, and this is, it's so funny, like this is such a cynic in me or what, I wonder if it's also kind of like playing the odds. They're playing the odds in that eventually the administration is going to pick up the wrong person.
Mm-hmm. And that, well, and they might. Yeah. That's the thing. And then
and
they'll
that's
going to
be the opportunity. Exactly. That's going to be the opportunity. But for some reason, like, they can't just wait until that happens.
Yep.
So they're just getting upset over everything. And I really think, like, some of them think eventually we're going to hit one that was wrongfully deported or is a U.S. citizen or is abused in some way, something. And mm-hmm. that at some point we'll be able to use that. And then all of the facts, all of the time that we supported a wife beater and a human trafficker or whatever are going to be forgotten because this is like the bigger issue. Like, I wonder really honestly if they're just kind of like playing the odds on this.
Well, so, that, and I think that there's also the maybe calculation that Americans and the administration and ICE are just going to get so tired of dealing with this that they're going to loosen the screws. They're just going to be like, I can't do this anymore. That maybe they'll let up on the pedal a little bit if they keep applying pressure. I just don't see that. I really see how effective this administration's handling of the southern border and deportations has been. And I mean, just by the sheer numbers, it is a net positive. And anybody out there who is in your feed, in your ear, telling you otherwise is lying based on the data. They really are. I mean, I think it's pretty safe to say that now. So I just don't see the Trump administration. And I mean, I think that they're going to make a mistake. They're bound to. Every administration does. When you're dealing in these numbers.
Numbers, yeah.
Of course something is going to happen. And of course the media will take it and spin it into the civil rights case of the century. That's to be expected. But that shouldn't deter the administration from doing what they were elected to do. I mean, if there is one issue that people went to the ballot box for, it was this and the economy.
His number one issue. The immigration situation is the number one issue. And then there's a lot of play with the language, too. So here in Tennessee recently, the Tennessee Highway Patrol have partnered or are assisting ICE around the Nashville area. And so over the weekend, there was a lot of reports about stops, things happening. And I was watching it on TikTok because people were starting to warn one another. Oh, these people are here. ICE is making stops over here. My husband was just detained. And they're also trying to. So the narration was racial profiling mainly because these stops were happening in, I think the neighborhood was Antioch, if I'm not mistaken, which is a neighborhood that is predominantly Latino. And that there were like trying to say, you notice that the officers aren't parked outside of, I don't know, Brentwood, Tennessee, which is a suburb of Nashville, which is a very affluent suburb of Nashville. So they're trying to say they're not parked out of Brentwood, but they're parked outside of Antioch because they're just looking for someone to arrest and detain. And my thought is, well, yeah. I mean, the assumption would be that you would go where you know there's a lot of activity and you're more likely than not to find people who are there illegally and possibly not only there illegally, but have also partaken in some illegal criminal activity. Yeah. It's the same argument if you think about back when we were dealing with Black Lives Matter and how there's a lot of discussion about police racial profiling in neighborhoods or targeting Black neighborhoods, but then you would have the people that lived in those neighborhoods being upset that there wasn't enough police presence to deal with the criminal activity in their neighborhood.
It's
a very similar situation here. And so I noticed that language was bubbling up over the weekend, that this is, they're snatching people off the street, that this is racial profiling. Of course, they're only targeting brown people. So if you are an American citizen, because the argument is that if you're an American citizen who has brown skin, you're going to end up deported.
Yeah.
There's been no evidence of that so far.
No, of course not. And the media is playing fast and loose with language. And I hope it comes back to bite them because it is. Well, it's like there's no journalistic integrity anymore. And you've got voices that were in the legacy media and now are on their own. And they're just saying stuff. They're not careful with what they say. They say things to incite feelings of fear and anxiety. And these are what used to be considered reputable sources. Even if you disagreed maybe with them politically, you could trust that they were giving you accurate information. I was watching one gal who used to work for CNN and CBS, one of the two or both. And now she has a very prominent Substack and goes on tons of interviews and talks with other newscasters and journalists all the time. And she was just like flippantly sitting on a plane making videos about how ICE agents are coming into cities, disappearing people off the street, grabbing people en masse and deporting them, ripping babies away from moms, tearing families apart. And I'm just like, wow, you are lying, first of all, but you're disseminating this information that's not true with zero context to thousands and thousands of people. And they are going to believe it because, I mean, we have a problem with misinformation being accepted by...
It's not just the misinformation, but it's also coupled with just this like derangement against anything that the Trump administration does. It's like, even right now, I guarantee you, which we're not going to get into in this episode, but this EO that he just signed on these prescription drugs, which I'm a I have my own concerns about, just like I have my own concerns about him proposing or being like okay with raising taxes on,
or I mean taking a Qatari plane, but whatever. Or, I mean, we'll talk about it.
But, you know, specifically on the taxes and the prescription drugs, this is something that Democrats would typically be like very pro for.
Excited
like,
about.
Excited about. And do you think they're going to put that aside and start to work with the administration to try and get those
absolutely
type of things
not
passed? No.
Absolutely
no,
not.
Because everything is in this realm of like complete derangement and can't, people just cannot fathom that, or even if he does do something that is even remotely something that they agree with,
right,
they're more afraid to agree with him because they're going to be ostracized by their own people. Do you understand what I'm saying?
Yes, I totally do.
Yeah. So I don't know. It's just nuts to me. This entire thing, this is going to continue to be the talking point. They're really hoping that this immigration due process narrative is something that really delivers. I think they can keep holding on to that, because if Trump does continue to pull off what is looking maybe possibly some success in the realm of trade deals and the economy improving, I don't think, unless there's some like serious, serious mistake, like drastic, almost like George Floyd level mistake, I don't see this helping them.
No.
To continue to align themselves with.
I know. And like we've said before, and I'm actually surprised we've made it this far, someone's going to get hurt. These kinds of altercations and interactions between law enforcement and citizens that are on the warpath against anything and everything that this administration does, there is going to be an incident where someone is hurt, and it's going to be very bad. And that's like a powder keg. You don't want that to happen. But when you have people that are being told by our legacy media friends every day that this is a authoritarian government, they are stripping rights away, they're tearing down the Constitution, they are taking power over the courts, they're fundamentally changing our country, which, I mean, I thought Democrats would be okay with, because
that was their goal in the beginning.
About that all the time.
But
anyway, something bad's gonna happen.
Well, summer is coming, as I always say. Summer is coming.
Yes, summer's coming. Get your boots ready for some peaceful protesting.
Speaking of the legacy media, before we move on to earmarks, I saw a report, which I bookmarked it, and I got to double check it, because you know how like there was reports that Caroline Leavitt and the White House press group were going to be taking, I guess, be in charge of the seating arrangements in the press room? That the legacy media has been pushed to the back and that new media are now getting the front seats.
Look at that.
So I'm not 100% like, I saw it quickly. I need to investigate it.
Well, I know that I was listening to one of the new media talking about how, for right now, since she's so new, she's on the sides, you know, where they're standing. She doesn't get a seat yet. And she's like, so awkward trying to stand there and raise my hand and hold my phone and everything. I mean, she's super excited to be in there, but it's weird being up on the sides and not getting to sit down. Those seats are like coveted.
Well, and I think one of the points that they were trying to say is that everybody's actually listening to new media and nobody's really listening to legacy media anymore.
I know. It's great.
Yeah, I know.
It's along your favorite podcast, guys, because we are the new media. We need you to do some legwork for us. Come on. Send it to a friend. Send it to your mom. Send
do
it to your
job.
Yeah.
Do
come
your
on.
Thing.
Spread get the us love. Into the White House press briefing room. That's what we want.
Oh my gosh. Okay, let's get into some earmarks. So the earmarks on Tuesdays are the stories that we didn't have time to talk about or that have not quite developed, but they need to be on your radar.
There's a lot of them today. So earmark number one, American hostage released by Hamas. I'm sure many of you caught this online last night, but Hamas let go of Adan Alexander, an Israeli-American hostage held in Gaza for over 580 days, was released last night.
And he went in at 19, and now he is 21 years old.
Yeah. And the
and
him,
I did not
and his
cry.
Family was so. No, I didn't cry at all.
I didn't cry at all.
Whatever.
I don't cry.
And I didn't. All of the videos watching his community in Israel was really beautiful. And just seeing him be transferred to the Red Cross and then to be brought home to his family was beautiful.
Well, it's also worth mentioning that the reports are that Hamas didn't get anything for this release. So this is,
And there are also reports that this was kind of an act of goodwill by Hamas because there are That's how they're trying to portray it, because, you know, people are trying to claim that there's they're reporting that there's some friction between Trump and Netanyahu right now, and mm-hmm. that this release was done without any aid or coordination through Israel, but it was actually done through back channels.
Ah, interessante.
Mm-hmm. So okay. I don't know, but we'll see. Anyways.
Earmark number two. This is a big deal, but there's just not tons and tons of information about it. I'm sure we'll talk about it as time goes on, as more deals unfold. The U.S. and China did cut a deal to ease up on tariffs after some of their meetings. Treasury Secretary Scott Bessent says that Biden's administration definitely fumbled this earlier. Big surprise.
There's like a 90-day pause on the tariff, and I think they've cut them down by 80% or something like that.
Yeah, it was significant.
Yeah, the 10% tariff across the board still applies.
It was something over 100.
It is currently on a 90-day pause. Yeah. I don't know what will happen after the 90 days. I can't imagine. So a lot of people are like, what if it goes up after the 90 days? I can't imagine that would happen. I don't think Trump will let that happen, or Bessent. Like, they'll.
But I am hearing like a lot of people online going, so wait, what was the point of any of it? Show me what this even did. I'm going to impose it, and then we're pulling it back. What was the actual point? That's kind of what some people
are. Well, and that's one of the things that we need to look into more. One of the things that Bessent did point out is that before Trump left the administration, that he had created mm-hmm. a framework for a brand new deal with China that put us in a better place with China, and that the Biden yes. administration did not pursue it or enforce it. And so apparently Bessent is saying that they are working off of that pre-existing framework, which is why they were able to have, now this could be spin, but this is why they were able to have a successful meeting in Switzerland. Yep. And remember, this isn't just about the tariffs. This is also about the deficit. It is also about how they manipulate currencies. There's more to what China does than just the tariffs. Yes. So yeah. even if at the end of the day, the tariffs kind of end up at the same place, the question is,
there's more,
all of the other extras, mm-hmm. where does that fall? So
there's definitely more context there. The next one, which we did reference earlier, is the Newark airport issues. They're just having a hard time. If you are flying into Newark this week or
don't
in the near future, I would readjust your schedule. There's been traffic control chaos. Obviously, this is, like we mentioned, we told you all you need to know. Biden administration did not.
I think he has pulled back. I think the airport itself, like, it's still running, but like at a much mm-hmm. lower capacity because the systems cannot support one of the busiest airports in the country. So,
yeah, it's not great. So maybe just check your airline ticket. Don't Okay, the last earmark is important, and I have a feeling we'll probably talk about it a little bit more in the future, but if you've been paying attention at all, you'll have read some headlines about how there yesterday at Dulles Airport here in Washington, D.C. area, there was the arrival of the first South African refugees. I referenced this multiple times on the Dawn Dispatch. I know we've talked about it, both of us, in our Instagram feeds. But the first group of South African Afrikaners landed on May 12th, thanks to Trump's executive order, where it's being stated that these South African farmers, who are all white, which is what the media is definitely going to pound into your head.
Upset about that.
Yeah, they're very upset that they're white and being murdered. Well, no, they're not sad about that. They're sad that they're white and being brought to the country as refugees. They were perfectly fine with them having to stay in South Africa and face actual horrific violence and persecution. And so Trump's EO, they're bringing them here with refugee status. And what the legacy media is really having a hard time with comprehending is that that is within Trump's right to do it. It's also, I don't know, a net good that he's doing that. And they're using this opportunity to talk about how Trump is totally fine deporting people of color, but while he brings white people into the country, is what they're really running with.
Well, and let's also talk about the vast difference of these two situations.
Yes.
The biggest thing about asylum seekers, when you get an asylum status and come in as a refugee, is that you are facing government persecution. Mm-hmm. So the issue in South Africa is that new laws were passed that are redistributing the land of South Africa to the black population in South Africa. And mm-hmm. there's been a lot of violence because there are individuals who feel that they are entitled to the land of these Afrikaners. And then they come in and attack them and kill them so they can take possession of their land.
And these laws that were instituted were based in this kind of similar DEI, almost, social justice.
It's like a reparations, yeah. nationalized
and there
reparations.
Were people, which, and also you'll notice too when the media is reporting on it, that they couch everything with, well, these are alleged rumors of them being persecuted. This is what Trump says is persecution, when it's like they're literally actually being murdered and horrible violence being perpetrated against them. But they just can't bring themselves to say it. They really want to keep readers focused on the fact that they're white and they're being brought in, and Trump and his administration is deporting people of color, brown people, back to their countries. And well, it's like,
and well, then the other thing that we're trying to say is, for example, that they don't, obviously, there are Afghanis that are in a similar situation. The challenge is, first of all, Afghanistan is the coordination with Afghanistan versus the coordination with South Africa. The way that you can verify background information with the South Africans and vet them versus, mm-hmm. I don't know, from Sudan or from any other kind of country that is facing persecution. There are challenges yep. there. And so it is easier when you're dealing with this group of people. And also, I want to point out that when you saw the people who were arriving, they were all families.
Interesting. They weren't all men like military age.
And when you yeah. cross from the southern border illegally, you're like, that is an illegal act. If they want to yes. seek asylum, they would follow the process of seeking asylum like these individuals did.
The stories are not the same, but they're just going to run with it.
Yeah. And having an economic struggle is not the same as, I don't know, like your government saying that you no longer have a right to your land and then people coming onto your farm and cutting off your arms.
Like yeah. it's a literal actual thing that's happening.
And one more thing that I thought was a funny, not funny, but it was just like an ironic talking point. Notice that there's not like hundreds of them, or they're not coming. So there's not really that many people facing persecution. And I'm like, isn't your whole narrative supposed to be about the marginalized, about the smaller group, about the people?
Not when they're white. Not when they're white.
No, Bye. They don't qualify. Yeah.
It was great too. Sometimes I love how Trump gives zero
shiz
cares. yeah. When he was asked about this in the Oval Office last night, and they were like, do you have a problem with the fact that all these people you're bringing in are white and you're deporting a bunch of brown people? He's like, they're being murdered and killed. I don't care if they're purple, green, black, brown, white.
Well,
I don't care.
I think killing is bad. Yeah.
and like, it's perfect.
I think it's really gross, too, because they're trying to draw the line because of the history of apartheid in Africa. Yeah. So their assumption is that these people are mm-hmm. descendants of.
They deserve it.
Yeah. And so they deserve
it.
Just say it out loud.
They're white. And so it's OK.
And so they're white.
Because at one time. Yeah. Yeah. And at one time, their family participated in something that was bad. So therefore, they are dispensable.
It all has very familiar
vibes,
doesn't it?
I feel like I've heard these things before.
All right. Well, that is it for today's episode of Rivera and Reeves. If this is your first time here, thank you for hanging out with us. We really appreciate it. Congratulations. You found your new favorite podcast.
Yay.
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 You just snuck that one in. That was funny. If you want to continue listening to us without ads and you want to get access to our bonus episodes, which there was a new one this weekend, please consider becoming a paying supporter. And also, if you've been a longtime listener, we would definitely appreciate for you to fill out the listener survey. Link is in the show notes. I promise I'm going to put it in there. We're going to close the survey tomorrow midnight. So you guys got, 48 hours or whatever? I don't do math. To answer the survey, and then also have a chance to win a free annual subscription and some Rivera and Reeves merch. So, by the way, visit our merch store. There's fun stuff there. So I think that's it. That's all we have for today's episode. We will see you again on Thursday for who knows what will happen.
Oh, probably nothing. It's going to be boring this week.
Okay. So in the meantime, here's a reminder that the media is trash and that we have no tolerance for it. Okay, friends. Bye.
Bye.
Why is life better with American Family Insurance? Because every policy comes with something very special. A trusted agent who's there to help protect your dreams by finding the right coverage at the right price. Save up to 23% when you bundle home and auto. American Family Insurance. Get a quote and find an agent at AmFam.com.
Products not available in every state. Visit AmFam.com to learn how discounts may apply to you. American Family Mutual Insurance Company, S.I. and its operating company, 6000 American Parkway, Madison, Wisconsin.